Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network. You're listening to the newchurches.com Q&A podcast. New Churches is an online hub for the mission of church multiplication. Here you'll find the resources and training you need to get started, as well as a community of church planting and multi-site experts to help you thrive. My name is Daniel Lim, and I'm here,
and with Daniel Lim.
All right, so we are going to be starting a three parts for now. We'll see how it goes. Mini series on the new. So some really just exploring some new creative and imaginative ways on different issues surrounding church planting. So this first one, here's the question. What are some new creative and imaginative ways denominations and networks are planting churches? So we're going to go through different topics over the next three episodes that Ed and I are on together. But let's start with planting churches, how denominations and networks.
Okay, yeah,
what are you hearing? What are you seeing
of the new? Do you just like make up these little mini series? Are you like the mini series maker? Because I'm not consulted on this. So it's
yes. Either I will make them up or a question from a listener will. Yeah. But you know what? Actually, you are the one who sparked all of
this mini series.
Tell
the people why. Yeah. The people want to know. The people demand to know why.
Well, because the Billy Graham Center is a part of the Lausanne movement. And recently you had a couple conversations other of the Lausanne members. And there are different topics that you guys had connected on. And there's something in those conversations that was just like, you know what? Hey, actually, that's what sparked
and what is all the of these name episodes. Of this thing? So. How do you say the Lausanne word?
Am I saying it wrong? Lausanne?
You just say it Canadian. Lausanne?
Lausanne? No, I said Lausanne.
It's different. You've got a little bit of a, I don't know, a francophone kind of sound to it. I don't know.
How do you say
it? Lausanne. It's Lausanne.
Oh, Lausanne.
But I think here's the thing. Okay. I mean, it's a city in Switzerland. Here's the weirdest thing. Like, literally, you created a movement named after a city in Switzerland that, so then they had Lausanne. They had Lausanne in like the Philippines, and then they had Lausanne in Cape Town. So it's like, so it's really weird when you like call up and like I'm the regional leader for Lausanne, North America. And I'm like, it's kind of like saying I'm the regional leader of Paris, North America, because people are like, what? How is it Lausanne, North America? So this is one of the great branding challenges of my life.
That's funny. That is funny. Okay, how do the Swiss pronounce the city?
I wasn't alive when they went to. Well, I think I was alive when Lausanne 1 came, but that'd be interesting. I don't even know. Yeah. We'll have to look it up. I think it's. I'm looking at the phonetic spelling. Can I press that and will it play? No, it would be nice if it played, but no, it doesn't. So I don't. But I don't know. I don't even know. So.
All right. Okay. So see, you're a part of this as well. I just work very effectively and efficiently, and I mine your brain for episodes.
Yes, there you go. Well, I'm happy to serve you.
Without you even knowing it. So, all right. So let's get to this. New creative and imaginative ways denominations and networks.
Well, I think
are
the biggest
churches.
Thing is obviously online. And so, we saw Stadia. We don't do guests on this program. I guess we're the guests on this program. But on one of my other channels, I have no idea, to be perfectly honest, which one. But we talked to Jeff Reed. Did we do that?
Oh yeah. Well, we had him on as a guest for CPLF.
Oh, okay.
Where he was talking about Fidgetal.
That's right.
Is that what he said? Fidgetal?
Yeah. I think that's helpful to kind of refer people to, because so Stadia actually has someone who's focused on online church planning. So I mean, Stadia is a network, fits that characteristic. Mm-hmm. I think for a lot of denominations, they're sort of unsure how to engage that. Networks tend to have. Not all networks, but many networks tend to have a looser ecclesiology. They're get it done kind of people, right? They're, whereas, I mean, if you're a confessional Lutheran, the idea of online church planning is just you're driving off a cliff when we mention that, because there are theological guardrails that you have that networks, and I'm not saying Stadia doesn't have theological guardrails, lest we get letters from Stadia, their restoration movement, there's certain things you do. But that openness, particularly among newer, more innovative networks. So certainly online, I think, has been key. I think another one that you and I are still working for, if you would respond to the email that I emailed you, you have not yet, just complaining about our work relationship right here.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I have there. A TA that's actually gathering, and we should put out a little mini report. Probably by the time this is out, people can find this. So let's link to it in the show notes. We're making a list of the kind of ways churches now are combining facilities. Because one of the things that we all know happened mm-hmm. when it was like boom was all of a sudden you didn't have your movie theaters anymore. Because movie theaters and schools are number one and number two. I think movie theaters yep. number one most recently, but number one and number two always. And so what happens is that all of a sudden these are not available to all these church plants. And, you know, movie theaters just closed down. I was in Manhattan yesterday, and I had lunch with the manager of the busiest movie theater in the world, Union Square Regal Cinema. And he's part of the church there. Wow. And they ain't doing much right now, right? New York City's still pretty locked down. So movie theaters, so churches, if they're not having theaters, they're not going to open up for churches. And then schools all created what we call a bubble. We have one at Wheaton College, right? It's sort of the bubble is loosening now as the cases are down. But the idea is that guests can't come on campus because that's how, you know, our students we're very cautious, and we ask students not to go away to weddings and all sorts of stuff. And again, you know, by the time this is released, some of these things are lessening, but so the bubble shut down all the schools, and the school systems shut down. I shouldn't say they didn't shut down all the schools, but you know, like even Chicago, still some of the schools aren't meeting. But you know, in places where schools are meeting, let's say you're in Texas, they're often not letting outside groups in, and you're outside groups. Mm-hmm. So that's some of the big shift that I think is suddenly required. So number one, big shift or big opportunity was online. And people all can do that to different levels. It might be a pre-launch activity, right? But then number two is combining into different contexts, right? So now we're all, I know an Anglican church, it's meeting all the way to the Baptist church, it's meeting with an ARC church. They're all sharing this space that's part of what we're working on for our Church Planning Leadership Fellowship conversation. Lastly,
yeah,
I would say some of the innovations that have been here is a slowing. Now, innovation... So you don't think of slowing as innovation, but it has opened the door for people to build more discipling and incarnational relationships because you didn't I think we're going to see, you look at church planning numbers, there's going to be a huge drop in 2020. And then by the time you get to Easter 2021, if you're in Colorado and if you're in Texas, you know, if you're in Florida, churches started to launch again. But for a lot of people, they moved into, sometimes they went bivocational, some of the pastors did, and where they might have started with a large launch mentality, the idea of packing a bunch of people in an exciting room for a worship service didn't resonate with a lot of people in 2020 and early 2021. So I think that helped push some people to more missional incarnational approaches as well.
Okay, so let's double click on that just for a little bit. I have two follow-up questions on that note in particular, but before we do that, let's just hear a quick word from our sponsor and we'll get back into it. No matter how many people you have on staff at your church, there's only so much you can accomplish in a day, right? Your church exists to serve your community, so the mission of your church and its staff is to reach as many people as you can. That's why productivity is essential for churches, as most of your church's success lies in its ability to lean into and leverage resources for optimum performance. And thankfully, our friends at Belay know this well. Belay, an innovative staffing solution with over 10 years of experience serving churches, has successfully matched thousands of organizations with part-time virtual assistants, bookkeepers, and social media strategists. That's why they're offering our listeners a free download of their resource, Church Leaders, Essential Strategies to Unleash Productivity. Let Belay help your church live its mission in your community by helping you juggle less and accomplish more. Just go to Belay, that's B-E-L-A-Y solutions.com/Lifeway for your free download. Now back to the episode. All right, so to double click on that in particular, Ed, Obviously, Launch Large up until COVID had been this increasingly, and you know, just kind of up and to the right, more and more church plants doing the Launch Large, and several networks and then denominations going coaching toward that end as well. And it was just, it's kind of like the stock market, right? It's like everything was constantly up and to the right and no one ever thought that it was going to dip or anything like that. And, and then COVID hit and all these churches had to pivot. And then there were some of our denominational and network friends who put a pause on church planting and all the assessments and all that stuff, and others who were like, you know what, those who are about to launch, we'll just let them continue to go. And they all took a different approach. Yet there are several churches, many church plants during the pandemic that did launch, and that did launch online. So do you think, actually, in light of what you said, that a stronger focus on disciple making and a stronger focus on, in a sense, kind of these micro church sorts of movements around missional church planting and multiplication will be the new norm? Or do you think we're going to revert back to the Launch Large
model? Kind of like model? The thing I've been saying all along is that, and you remember back in the day when I said, this is going to be the biggest global crisis in your lifetime. And people were like mocking me and saying, this is just the flu. And, you know, and so, you know, early on, I said, this is going to be, I said, they're going to shut the schools, they're going to shut the churches. And you didn't believe me, did you, Dan? Just be honest. Did you believe me?
Well,
nope. Anyway. And then, so, but then, I'm also one. So what we heard early on was this is going to be a big, super big deal. You know, on my podcast, that the Stetzer Leadership Podcast, the first guy I had on was talk some about this being a winter, not a winter, but I was going to get to his name, but an ice age, I kind of agree this is going to have like year, could be longer. You know, it just typically could be a year or two. I don't know how long an ice age is, if that's 10 years. But I think one of the things I sort of wanted to pull back on a lot of people was, and Alan Hirsch was quoted as saying this, but Alan did not say this. I was on a meeting once and he like sent me a direct message, said, I didn't say that, because someone quoted Alan as saying that, is that this is going to be the end of the megachurch and that kind of stuff. And so I think what happened was people heard the dire prediction of an ice age and they thought this is the end of the large gathering. And I early on said, no, this is what, I mean, this is not the first pandemic. This is not the worst pandemic. It's not the worst pandemic in some people's lifetimes. There are people who have survived the Spanish flu. And what happens is that people revert to the norm, and the most likely predictor of future behavior is past behavior. So, you know, and so I thought back, I think I mentioned this on a podcast months ago. You know, I preached my last service at Moody Church in an empty building. You know, and they're actually very graciously, having me back to preach again and doing a little celebration to, because we never had that, right? So I finished the interim a year ago, I guess. Or not quite a year ago, but close to it. And so it's just so gracious of them to do that. But the point is that on Easter Sunday, not this Easter, but the Easter before, I preached to an empty room at Moody Church. Yet I remembered that so did someone else 100 years before. They didn't close down the church 100 years before the Spanish flu. But so Moody Church survived the Spanish flu, and Moody Church survived, you know, and you know, countless churches have survived pandemics. And they tend to take actions during a pandemic that are mitigation. And people have known for hundreds of years, people have known for centuries that they didn't know what a viral transmission load was, but people knew 1,000 years ago that if you're sick and you get around other people who are not sick, you get them sick. So they knew about contagion.
Yeah.
And so they kind of distance themselves, but then they come back. And so I think the most likely scenario is they'll come back. I would say what's happened in 2020 really is not, I don't think it's the pandemic that's going to have long-term detrimental effect on the church. However, I do think 2020 could have, you know, we've talked about this before. I think we're in a 60-year convulsion culturally that's going to undermine institutions, but that's not the pandemic that created that. That's the pandemic adds to that. So there's going to be challenges, and there's going to be challenges for, I think, 4 or 5 years, but I think those are related to the cultural convulsion, questioning authority structures and institutions that we're walking through. And I think church plants are going to revert to the norm within your Canada is behind where we are in the US just because of a bad bet on a vaccine. I mean, people don't know all the details, but and there's no domestic manufacturing of vaccines in Canada. So, but Canada will catch up in the few months. And, you know, when people get to 50, 60% vaccinated, things begin to change. And we've seen that in the US and so certainly seen that in Israel. And we'll see that in Canada soon too.
Yeah. So, okay. So let's, and we're getting
sorry, I really went off on a long riff there.
No, it's okay. So just, okay, let's just think pre planting missional churches.
The best book ever written.
When Dale and Felicity House, and, you know, you just have so many people writing on Simple Church, House Church, you know, Neil Cole, when Organic Church came out, and all of that, right? And there's just this huge movement toward the House Church and all that. And then you see right now, in the midst of the pandemic, many mega churches and church plants really embracing that, you know, a type of that model. Are you saying then that you think we're going to revert back in a couple of years to what it was?
Or do
you
think the case? Now, here's what I would say. Other cultural issues, suspicion towards the church, negative perceptions towards evangelicals, would have, in my view, longer term, bigger impacts on missiological strategy than assuming the pandemic is a 2-year experience. Now, that's, you know, that's there are pandemics that are not 2-year experience, but we think of Spanish flu, and there was really bad couple of years, but and it stuck around for, you know, decades. Spanish flu didn't, I think, cease to exist or be circulating until the 50s, if I recall. I think the 50s.
Oh, really?
I think I may be saying something wrong, but if I recall, the 57 pandemic sort of bumped out the final versions of the Spanish flu. None of us knew any of this like a few years ago, and I'm probably wrong. I think that assuming that it just cycles into the other, like you know, I think what we might see is that people 2 years from now might have a cold, and that might be COVID-19. So, it's kind of in the system. And I think when we get to that point, that by then, I think things will probably revert within a few months to that. Things will revert to the other side. That'd be my guess.
Yeah. No, that's good. Well, we're going to get to the next, we're going to put an end here, and then we're going to continue this mini series on the new, but just some final words on for denomination and network leaders who are listening in. It's interesting how during the pandemic, you went very local and had to be local because the response to the pandemic was very local. And I've seen many of you go very much toward coaching and really resourcing contextually, locally, your church plants. And I wonder if moving into the future, there's even going to be a greater local approach. I'm just a thought that I wonder if there's actually going to be more contextual and local approaches where more and more of your energy is going to be toward coaching churches to be planting churches themselves and helping churches locally. And I know all of you know this, and we've talked about this lots at our CPLF, our Church Planting Leadership Fellowship, but I just wonder if that's that aspect at least is going to increase.
No, I could definitely see that. And I think there are multiple factors going on here that we need to consider. And I think sometimes people sort of just put it in the category of the pandemic. And I think that's ultimately, it's ultimately kind of a mistake. And I think that's the difference between two. By the way, while we're talking, I tried to look just to make sure on the Spanish flu. And here's what history said.
This is how you have so many facts in your head. You're not just going to throw it out. You're like, to fact check in it.
But every so often, direct descendants of the 1918 flu combined with bird's flu or swine flu to create more powerful pandemic strains was exactly what happened in 57, 68, and 2009. So they're kind of related to that. But I think what happens is these things become just part of our ongoing lives. Yeah. Crazy. And so again, if I got the details on that, please don't send letters to Daniel M. if I missed some of the history of the Spanish flu there as well. But the point is that we're going to have to become used to some of these things.
Yeah. My email's Ed.
No, that does not, that email does not work. So people should not try to send that there. Do not give out my email.
All right. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next time.